that is Mr. Teboho Ramsangwana, and we also have our administrative person who's assisting us with all the administrative matters. That is Ms. Salamina Mashishi.
Take it, Mr. Chalamba, you were aware that our meeting is starting after hours, so the IT person would have been primed to be here. It's not possible to say because we are doing a meeting after 4 o'clock, there was no IT person to connect us here. But if that is what you are saying to us, then we have to rely on the presentation that is already printed if you can't flash it. Honourable members, you have since joined us. Can you introduce yourself? You have done it from our side.
Good afternoon. Apologies for coming late. We lost track of time there. I'm Asila Islam, alternate member of the Health Committee.
Good afternoon to the team. My name is Lindy Wilson, member of the Health Portfolio Committee.
Yeah, my name is Chizizu Mnyai, the whip of health and a member of the Portfolio Committee of Health. Thanks.
Ms. Heller, we'll then give it to you. We do have members, this presentation, which is not flashing up there, is copies printed, and we will have to start because I was not informed that if you have meetings after 4, the staff of this parliament will not be there to assist to make it. I mean, some of us are new in this parliament, but it would make sense for me to have your people here. It cannot be, let's say. Pre-arrangement, you should know a person by name and number who is supposed to come and connect. It can't be something that is being arranged now. Something that should have been arranged in the morning, that we have a meeting starting at 4:30, and this is an individual who will come and do the connection. Not something that is an emergency. The planned activity this morning, yesterday. Okay, Honorable Jacobs, we are ready to start. We'll rely on this printed presentation.
Thank you, Chair. We have prepared a comprehensive report, this being our report for the first time as SAPRA. But in the interest of time, we will not go through every point, but we will be happy to respond to any questions that may come from the honorable members from any part of the presentation. And the way this presentation is in two parts. There's a strategic overview, which is the part A, which deals with policy and legislative mandates, governance issues, and then our objectives, and we'll speak a little bit to the backlog clearance project. And then the second part will deal with our strategic goals and program and the budget. And the way we're going to take it, our acting CEO will deal with the backlog clearance program and the strategic objectives and goals, and our compliance officer will deal with the policy and legislative and the governance issues. And I will just do an introduction to say who SAPRA is. SAPRA is the regulatory authority that regulates medicines and medical products, including medical devices. And we focus on registration and control of medicines. We focus on compliance with requirements. We do have an inspection and enforcement unit that deals with sanctions and penalties. We do give out information and in terms of the laws of the country, and we regulate how medicines and all health products are advertised and make sure that it is done in an ethical manner. And we do collaborate with the tertiary institutions to support our capacity and capabilities. And our vision is on slide 4 there. To strive towards excellence in health product regulation with the aim of protecting and promoting human and animal health in South Africa. being recognized, respected both nationally and globally as a leading and exemplary health product regulator. And our mission is to safeguard the health and well-being of all who live in South Africa and to support human and animal health through scientific and ethical regulation of medicines, medical devices, radiation-emitting devices, and radioactive nuclides. As you may know, honorable members, SAHPRA was established in terms of the Medicines and Related Substances Act to replace the old Medicines Control Council, which was the regulator for over 40 years. SAHPRA's mandate was expanded to regulate all medicines, including complementary medicines, medical devices, in vitro diagnostics, radiation-emitting devices, and radioactive nuclei. And the Minister of Health appointed the SAHPRA board on the 2nd of September, of October, sorry, 2017. And we have the a number of committees of the board that are highlighted in the presentation. And the acting CEO was appointed by the board in consultation with the minister in accordance with the law. And there's a staff agreement that was signed in October with Section 197 to transfer staff from the Department of Health to SAHPRA. And we started operating the SAHPRA on the 1st of February 2018. And we faced quite a number of multiple challenges upon launching 2018. Some of the challenges related to the fact that we were, as you might know, under the Department of Health. And that year we had a little bit of industrial action which put us into trouble. And we had to find a building very quickly to make sure that SAHPRA's activities do not stop. And we found the building at the CSIR and moved on. And then we had to progress and appoint a new executive team and finish the Section 197 transfer of staff. And we had to re-engineer all regulatory processes from what we used to do as the MCC to be fit for a more efficient regulator. And I must say, one of the downsides of the industrial action was that we had an MOU with the Department of Health, which was supposed to help us with a lot of the corporate issues as we were establishing ourselves. It didn't work very well in the light of the industrial action. We didn't get staff coming to work and so on, so it was a little bit difficult. Our compliance officer will now take over and deal with the governance issues, if you allow us to.
If you can keep on reminding us that you announced like 7 or 8, that will help, because you're not beginning up anything here.
We will be beginning, temple chair will be beginning at slide 9.
Thank you, Vice Chairperson, honorable members. I am going to deal with two items. One being our legislative environment, and the other one being governance issues. The Deputy Chair has in part dealt with some of the governance issues. So in the interest of time, Chairperson, with your permission, I will only deal with two slides, slide number 9 on page 5 and slide number 10 on page 6. And sort of summarizes everything in the short.
The idea behind this part of the presentation is to give a schematic presentation of where SAHPRA fits in the broad scheme of things. I think it's very important to us, at least, that the committee understand our mandate exactly in the way in which it has been conceptualized. So our mandate really is to regulate health products intended for animal and human use. We do that through various mechanisms which our APCO is going to deal with at length in terms of issuing permits, in terms of inspections, and of course recalls and other related activities.
I think the other leg, which is quite important and big in our organization, is licensing of manufacturers, wholesalers, distributors of medicines and medical devices, and also issuing various licenses under the category of radiation control for both radiation emitting devices and radioactive nuclear. I think the other important leg that we perform is on clinical trials. We regulate the conduct of clinical trials, which we do in terms of predetermined norms that exist in the country. I think insofar as on slide 10, page 6, we derive our functions from the Constitution, section 27, that deals with the right to access to healthcare services, including reproductive healthcare services. And this is, in as far as we are concerned, at least the supreme law of the country, and SAHPRA was specifically created so that it can attend to certain segments of that particular right. So when we talk about registration of products, medical products, including medical devices, which are so much needed for healthcare in this country, this is what we refer to, because we provide every right that all the citizens have in terms of the Constitution. Then there is a piece of legislation, the National Health Act, which then sets out the national health systems. And it is also a legislation that came about as a result of Section 27 of the Constitution. So SAHPRA, in its mandate, then functions in tandem with other parts or segments of the mandates of the Department of Health. So that act simply tells us that we need to fit in the broad mandate of the Department of Health, and we play our role insofar as healthcare is concerned, and we see ourselves as a critical player in terms of that section, in terms of that piece of legislation. And certainly then it is the Medicines and Related Substances Act, the Medicines Act. So this is the act that gave rise to SAHPRA. The chairperson has indicated that SAHPRA is an organization that replaced the old Medicines Control Council. So SAHPRA came into being in terms of Section 2, and our functions are outlined in terms of that act, and I've briefly talked about those, which are quite extensive, and in the interest of time, safe to say that it is the act that we utilize in executing our role, and that we ensure that all the players and our primary stakeholder being the patient are really protected in terms of the authority that we have and in terms of the powers that we have in executing our mandate. So then we have the Hazardous Substances Act, which is the, one of the functions that the chair has alluded to that was extended to SAHPRA. It is currently housed here in Cape Town, and it has some inspections in Devon. So briefly, these are the guys, the unit that deals with radiation emitting devices. They also issue licenses, they also issue permits, they also inspect certain institutions and facilities that are outlined in that particular act. I think the other issue which is common cause then is our understanding of being a 3A entity that we must then comply with Public Finance Management Act in terms of our reporting annually, in terms of tabling of budgets, in terms of procurement processes. We are duty bound, and this is what we meant that we wanted to indicate where we fit in terms of the broad legislative environment. Then, Chairperson, you have other legislating impacting on what we do. These are your normal
Haja, promotion of Administrative Justice Act, your copy protection of Personal Information Act. The FTCU is going to deal at length with our new projects in terms of digitalization, and in terms of those processes, we are duty bound to comply with other pieces of legislation that have a bearing on that. I think, lastly, then, from my side, Chairperson, then we have the governance framework, just like any other entity created in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. We have the board that has been appointed by the minister for a period of time, and the board has appointed acting CEO after consulting the Minister of Health. We also want to mention that the board has resolved that the entity must be capacitated with executives. It has approved the macro organizational structure, and that the entity has been capacitated with both technical staff and senior management. So what you have here is by and large what very much is the senior management of our organization. And I think on your next invite, we would look much better in terms of representation. I think I'll stop there in terms of governance issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon, Honorable Members. I will take the members through SAPRA's mandate overview and objectives, and I'll also take the committee through the backlog clearance program. I will start with slide number 18. I will start with the issue of registration of pharmaceutical. Registration of pharmaceutical and biological products. As the Vice Chairperson has alluded to the fact that we experienced challenges during the year 2018-19 due to a prolonged protest action in Civitas building, and our ability to deliver on our objectives was affected, but nevertheless, we have been able to make a significant progress in a number of key areas, such as that we managed to develop a comprehensive costed backlog clearance strategy for human, veterinary, pharmaceutical, and biological products. And we also managed to digitize a whole lot of processes in the organization. And we have also prioritized evaluation of medicines that are required for HIV, TB, and cancer, including the new chemical entities and biological medicines. The prioritization was done in response to epidemiological patterns. We also redesigned our fee structures and also the performance metric model for human and pharmaceutical and biological products. And we have digitized, as I've alluded before, and automated a number of processes within the organization. And we also managed to complete an audit that was for clinical trial applications. For the key objectives for 2019-20 with regard to the registration of medicines is that we want to roll out the backlog clearance program, which I will later describe in detail, and also roll out the new evaluation models that were designed for the backlog clearance program for business as usual, and also implement the inflationary fees already published for public comment, and also implement the second phase of the new fees and performance metrics models. This we plan to do by September 2019, and also continuously engage industry with regard to, you know, the applications on GMP surveys. And we also plan to publish new regulations and guidelines for comment to facilitate new ways of reviewing applications, including reliance models. I'm now moving to slide 20. It's a continuation of the objectives that we'll be doing with regard to medicine registration. We will also conduct multiple training and information sessions regarding the new policies that we have developed and processes. And we also finalize the policies and guidelines and also recruit the necessary human resources relating to the work that to be done with regard to registration. And also concurrent to this, the backlog clearance program We will implement a strategy to leverage new models of evaluation for business as usual, to ensure and also ensure that we regularly communicate with industry and the public at large. With regard to what we call the sale of unregistered medicines, that is Section 21 applications, these are applications for unregistered medicines relating to life-threatening situations for both individuals and also that will be accessed at the hospitals. What we have done in this particular section, we have done a comprehensive analysis for Section 21 processes to identify areas that needed improvement. And there were a whole lot of challenges with this particular section where the processes we had in place were insufficient, where we spent a lot of time doing administrative tasks such as data capturing. And with that, we had a lot of applications that were for renewals that also required the same amount of time to be attended to. What we have done in 2018-19, what we have done, we have re-engineered the process. We have digitized the process and automated and also increased the staff capacity. What we will do in 2019-2020, we will improve on the automated digital system so that it can respond to the other gaps that we have identified using the automated system. With regard to clinical trials, the unit reviews four types of submissions. Those are new authorizations that come from pharmaceutical industry and also academic trials, also termed investigator-initiated clinical trials and bioequivalence studies. We also review those protocol amendments following the approval of the initial protocol studies. And we also approve investigators that work at the site, and also before a site can be initiated, it needs to be approved by SAHPRA. We also approve what we call notification studies, and these are mostly phase four trials that using a product that has been already been approved, the indication has been approved, and it will also be used according to the dosage and directions for use. The information there, the figures as we have them there have changed. These have been overtaken by events. We have now cleared all those applications that appear as pending as of 14 December 2018. Key objectives for 2019-20, we will work in a way in order to ensure that we don't have any backlog in clinical trials. And we will continue engaging the industry and academic with regard to the conduct of clinical trials. And we also we will also procure a digital online application system for clinical trials, because what we have also identified is that we also take a lot of time trying to capture the information that has been submitted. And most of the time we get queries from applicants who will be following up on their application. So it's going to be the digitization will also assist in that regard. With regard to inspections, licensing, and regulatory compliance unit, this is the separate arm that ensures that pharmaceutical premises, personnel, medicinal products meet the minimum standards of good manufacturing, good wholesale practice, and clinical practice. What has happened in this particular unit is that we have a higher attrition rate of staff, with a number of staff being poached by industry. So we are looking into capacitating this unit so that we don't have a backlog developing in this area. And in 2019-2020, we're working on reconciliating the application fees as well as the inspection fees, and also, as I've alluded to, that we need to staff, we'll concentrate on staffing for both capacity and competency, and we'll also ensure that the move towards digitized pathways and processes is also attended to. I'm now moving to slide 27, that is on page 14, that is with regard to medical device. The medical device unit is responsible for the licensing, licensing of manufacturers, distributors and wholesalers of medical devices, facilitating the evaluation of medical devices, also clinical trials that are using medical devices, and also the issue regarding law enforcement and the vigilance. The vice chairperson has indicated that we have taken over, you know, new responsibilities, including the medical devices. This unit will need to be staffed going forward, and despite the limited staffing in the unit, we managed to approve about 700 medical devices, licenses for medical devices facilities. Going forward, we will implement a system to register medical devices and then also increase staffing and implement a specialized IT system, then also develop an online system for registration of medical devices. We have also, on slide 29, taken over the regulation of medical electromedical devices and those sources that are, that emit ionizing radiation. The radiation control unit that previously belonged to the Department of Health. This radiation control unit, the functions include licensing, compliance management, enforcement, investigation of complaints, incidences involving ionizing radiation, and also occupational exposures, import and export and disposal, etc. This unit here has also experienced a critical staff shortage, which has been, you know, existing over the years, and that needs to be corrected. We will also prioritize capacitation of this unit. And also, this unit hasn't been charging fees for services that they have provided. Now, with SAPRA being a public entity where we need to also collect fees, we have assembled a group that will work on, you know, proposing fees for service that will be to be charged in this regard. And we will also engage the National Department of Health, including the other relevant stakeholders, the National Nuclear Regulator and the Department of Energy, as this is a new portfolio for SAPRA. With regard to corporate services, SAPRA previously depended on the National Department of Health with regard to the corporate service support. SAPRA's first year as a fledging entity was marked with protracted protest action that hindered the administrative support within SAPRA's own structures, as well as that which should have been received in accordance with the Memorandum of Agreement signed by the Department of Health. We have signed a Memorandum of Agreement for support from the Department of Health, but because of the protest action, the Department could not honor that. And there was also this was also compounded by difficulties with SAPRA accommodation, necessitating the agent to relocate so that we can keep SAPRA functional. And the capacitation of this organization's executive and senior management echelon began in 2018 and is ongoing for 2019. With regard to the staff transfer agreement, this was signed in October 2018, and the staff was formally notified in October 2018. Chairperson, I will now move over to the presentation on the backlog clearance program, which will start on slide 33, page 17. With the launch of the SAPRA, the board agreed that the first thing that they need to do was to clear the backlog of medicinal products that was inherited from the former Medicines Control Council. And the backlog was defined as all applications submitted which are yet to receive final approval, including certification, that is as of 31 January 2018. We have inherited close to about 16,000 applications. 50% of those are new registration, and also 50% are for variations, that is applications for amendments. And the submissions date back to the year 1992, and also 50% of the registration backlog and applications is older than, 5 years. In addition to the inherited backlog, we receive close to about 4,700 applications per year, and we can only process, with the staff complement that we have currently, we can also only process about 2,550 applications. So this shows that the backlog project is an ongoing challenge. And also at the current capacity and with the current processes, it will take us close to about 8 years to clear the backlog. That is assuming no applications are submitted. We have made an innovative step to rapidly eliminate this existing backlog. And that we're doing simultaneously while we're reforming the operating model and also addressing the challenge of submission volumes that are exceeding absorption capacity. Our ambition, including the board's ambition, is to clear this backlog within 2 years. With the backlog strategy that we have developed, it has three pillars. One being that we need to reduce the number of applications that require evaluation. Two, segment and prioritize the remaining applications. And lastly, design and implement new models of evaluation, because we cannot, you know, operate the same way we operated before if we are serious about clearing the backlog. Pillar one that speaks about reducing the number of applications that require evaluation is explained on slide 41. What we have done is we have engaged the industry and asked the industry to opt in for pre-2014 new registration applications and also opt out for post-2014 applications. And also what we have done is that we have consolidated, updated, and asked them to resubmit all applications and also reject the poor quality applications. As a result of this pillar one, we managed to reduce the backlog project by about 3,000 applications were withdrawn. With regard to pillar two, applications were grouped by therapeutic area and prioritized by public health needs. Slide 43 indicates where our highest priority was, and this was done in consultation with the National Department of Health. Slide 44 shows the registration applications, the windows of resubmissions for the application that needs to be resubmitted. The first being that we're going, as we have indicated in the previous slide, we'll start with the HIV, TB, hepatitis, vaccines, and high priority new chemical entities, and then followed by the oncology and the medium priority new chemical entities. We have launched the backlog project on the 1st of August, and then the applications have already been submitted for the first resubmission windows, and then now we are tending to resubmission windows. With regard to pillar three, which is now, I'm now on slide 46. SAPRA, for us to be able to clear the backlog in such a way that we change how we do business, and we have identified a need to also work with other recognized regulators, and then so that we can translate into the new realized policies as provided for in the Act. What we're going to do is that slide 46 indicates that there will be applications that will need full review. Those applications will be new chemical entities that have not been registered elsewhere, and there will be applications that will need to be, to follow a breached review. And in that case, those ones will only assess specific pre-agreed areas of substantive interest to SAPRA, that is stability data, interaction with other medication. For example, we have a high, this prevalence of HIV and TB, so we'll need to also look into those interactions with those medicines. And we will also follow what we call a verified review process, and then in this particular case, just to validate that the application submitted conforms to the reference authorization, and provides required information. And with regard to recognition, this is where we're also working towards. This will be the case where we accept the reference authorization without review. We haven't entered into agreement with other regulatory authorities as yet. We'll be working towards that. Slide 47 indicates the regulatory authorities that we align ourselves with, and also that we will also apply to the license processes. In addition to the new evaluation model, a new operating model is required. What we did is that we have staffed the backlog project team, and we have ring-fenced the backlog project so that it has its own dedicated staff members to do the project. And we have also empowered digitally the project where we get submissions submitted in e-format or also what we call electronic common technical document, which is an ECTD. And we're also having regular and frequent communication with the and in engagement with the industry and other stakeholders. Where are we today? We started with a backlog of plus minus 16,000 that had about 7,800 variations and then 8,200 new registration applications. From the pillar one method, we managed the about close to 2,600 applications were withdrawn. And then from the registered applications, those that needed certification, that needed amendments to be approved, we have already approved about 1,700. And then now that leaves our backlog project with about 6,100 variations and also 5,170 new registration applications. We are getting there, we are winning. What we have done so far, we have launched the backlog project on the 1st of August, and this is just summarizing what I've just alluded to previously, and then we have procured and customized and tested digital systems, including the workflow tracking software. And the backlog clearance team has already been recruited, and then training is ongoing, and also for others that have started earlier, training is completed. And we also having regular engagement with industry with regard to the progress of the backlog project. Slide 52, with the new processes that we have developed, we are ensuring that this needs to be translated in the business as usual, so that we don't have two parallel processes happening in the regulatory authority. The processes that have been developed and also the guidelines, including policy documents developed at the time, will also be will apply across the board. And now I will be moving, Chairperson, to the on page 28, strategic objectives. And I think through you, Chair, I think we have covered the objectives of the progress in the previous slides. If the Chair still wants to go through the rest of the presentation with regard to the objectives and the goals, we will just get that guidance from the Chair. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. With all that said, we will now move over to the budget section that is on page 34. The CFO will take us through slide 67.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Deputy CEO. I'll just talk to the budget and the funding of SAPRA. As a start, SAPRA is funded mainly by the fees cut through an allocation and the fees it generates or service we provide. And so that's how mainly it's funded. On the, if I go to the table on slide 67, I'll just focus on year 1920 financial year. If you look at the total budget of SAPRA, it's about 308 million rand, and the makeup of the funding of it on the revenue side is that 112 million rand of it is funded through the fees it provides. I mean, the from the fees, from the service it provides, and the biggest chunk of it is coming from the allocation from the fees cut. And for 1920 financial year, it's about 183 million rand. Included in that number of 183 million is a 40 million rand, which is specifically earmarked for the backlog project. We have a slide on the funding of the backlog project, which I will go into a bit of detail, but that number looks obviously big from 1819 to 1920. But the majority of the increase in there, it is the backlog project and a budget that was allocated for radiation control, which was previously allocated to the Department of Health in 1819, and now it's coming through to SAPRA in 1920 financial year. That explains the jump in the two financial years, and how those funds are spent. Of the 308, 137 million rand of it goes towards compensation of employees, and 137 million goes to goods and services, mainly, and in a small portion going towards capital expenditure of 4.6 million rand, and that fully utilizes the 308 million that's provided for 2020 financial year. Moving on to the next slide, Chair, which is slide number 68. I've already spoken to the jump in the two financial years. The main bullet that I'll focus on is that from SAPRA, any revenue, any surplus that will be generating, we'll be requesting Treasury to approve that we can retain them to fund the initial stages where we're establishing the organization. There's a lot of things that we need to spend money on just to get the organization off the ground that were previously covered by the Department of Health. And the CEO alluded to that, mainly around the corporate services side, we have a lot of work to do there since it wasn't previously done by ourselves. We also have fees that we are currently not charging for, and medical devices is one of them, the actual medical devices. Currently we are charging for the establishment themselves, but not for the devices. And the radiation control, that we also not charging for it. And the CEO spoke to a committee that was set up to look at the fees that are provided for by radiation control and to ensure that we are charging for them for next year. So the plan is that we'll be looking at that and finalizing the fees for. Part of the plan is to implement them from the 1st of April in the next financial year. The next slide is slide number 69, and this just talks to the splitting the total budget by the different programs that we have there, and just as the split there. I'll move to the next slide number 70. And I think this we thought maybe since backlog is such a critical project that we should have a standalone slide which shows how it's funded. I think what the slide says to us mainly is that we've costed the backlog project, and our projection comes to that we need about 305.4 million to fund the entire backlog project, and that spans over the 24 months. I know it says maybe three financial years, but it's covering the 24 months. So that's how much we projected that we need to fund the backlog project. And if I go back to the top part of the same slide on the funding of the projected expenditure, if you look Treasury, the 40 million I referred to, which is the first two lines under revenue, is the funds that come from National Treasury or through the government allocation. And over the 2 years, they will be allocating 60 million rand, which is the first 30, and it's split per financial year. In 1920, we'll be receiving 40 million rand, and in 2021, we'll be receiving 20 million rand, which brings the total to 60 million rand. We have also generated revenue from the backlog or from application that are sitting in the backlog project, and that amounts to about 35 million rand. And the remainder of the funding, as can be seen on the presentation, is that it's donor funding, and 24 million rand of it will come from CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and about 50 million rand will come from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There's also donor funding, and 1.4 from CHAI, which is Clinton Health Access Initiative, will also be funding towards the BECO project. But as can be seen, that the rates are quite clear that what's already been raised towards the BECO project is not sufficient to cover the entire budget required 305 million rand. So the management, together with the board, which are garnering funds, raising funds through engaging government and donors to close that gap of 135 million rand. I think that's the end.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank
you. Honourable members, I have requested that the team brings along a presentation of which I could give a background with regards to this is not going to escape our involvement, the cannabis in the country, in the world. There was a parliamentarian who brought this item to Parliament, may he so rest in peace, and then certain processes then kick in. So some of us have been seeing this from far. We don't know what it is and where it is. It would just be a good spot time now to begin to get that presentation and understand where we may come in with our involvement. So this is a team that actually appraises us on that. I think now they will take us, remember they've got this second presentation. That's why I would request them to take us to that.
Then the chair will ask Professor Pandu to take us through the cannabis presentation. Okay. Just by way of background, when we were still under the Medicines and Control Council, he was chairing a cannabis committee that was looking at all issues that relate to cannabis. He used to be chair of the Schegelin Committee that also deals with access issues. And therefore, we felt he would be the best person to do the presentation. Thank you, Chair. Over to you.
Thanks, Melissa. Thank you, Honourable Chair, for the opportunity. We thought we'd take the view that perhaps as part of this discussion on cannabis, that we gave you some idea of the work that SAHPRA does in the context of its mandate to both regulate and control therapeutic substances, particularly those that are at risk of causing dependence, etc. As indicated on the chair, part of the work that we did under the former Medicines Control Council was in fact to support the Department of Health and the then Minister in engaging Parliament around the Medical Innovation Bill that was presented at that time. The context at the time was the view of government that the Medicines Act already had provisions in it that would have allowed for the key provisions in the Medical Innovation Bill to be addressed through the Medicines Act as well. And that in fact was part of the basis that enabled Parliament to consider setting aside the Medical Innovation Bill at the time. It was driven by several commitments from the Department of Health and from government to in fact begin to evolve a framework that would allow for a better understanding, for expanding access to medical use, for cannabis and different cannabinoids as well. But it was also part of a commitment to ensure that as a country, we were not only trying to align with several global initiatives, but also made a very formal commitment to undertaking specific research and exploring opportunities for looking at commercial and industrial opportunities in not just the cannabis, but in the hemp space as well. So I think it was in fact quite a wide mandate. The Medical Innovation Bill simply looked at exploring medical cannabis with a view to better understanding its role in the healthcare system and offering opportunities for expanding research. And bringing to the fore specific products that could in fact have an impact on the health of the population. So I think there's several areas that are up for discussion and being considered currently. But SAHPRA's mandate, as was the mandate of the Medicines Control Council, was really in terms of what was provided under Act 101 of 1965, which is the Medicines Act. And that really gives SAHPRA a limited mandate in terms of ensuring that more information in relation to the use of cannabis for medicinal purposes, for research, as well as to ensure that if there were products that were being made available in the marketplace, that those were in fact considered in the context of safety, quality, and efficacy as well. SAHPRA doesn't have a mandate in terms of policing recreational use or private use. That clearly is the mandate of our law enforcement agency. Similarly, the recent Constitutional Court judgment, and I know I haven't even moved to the first slide of this presentation, but the Concord judgment made reference to a provision in the Medicines Act, which is Section 22A9, in relation to its unconstitutionality, but with respect to cannabis. And the question then becomes, and I think I've referenced this point earlier on, that the recommendation of the Constitutional Court is simply to address the lack of constitutionality around Section 22A9 in relation to cannabis. It's not about striking down that provision in the Medicines Act, because that provision is in fact one that guards South Africans against the hard drugs as well. The cocaines and the opiates, and that actually needs. So that provision in law is actually needed. Insofar as that provision affects cannabis, the view of government, and it includes the Department of Health, but the Department of Justice and other government departments as well, is that there is already a mechanism within the Medicines Act to simply reschedule cannabis so that Section 22A9 does not any longer apply to cannabis. And I think that's the view. That, we believe, Chair, is in fact the short and easy view, but I think the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development is currently also considering that perhaps South Africa needs a specific piece of legislation around cannabis in itself. One that will articulate not just the health issues, the access to medicinal cannabis, but address issues around research, address issues around hemp production and hemp cultivation as a potential agricultural crop for South Africa. And that, in fact, has progressed to some extent. There's draft legislation, which I believe is still being considered by the different intergovernmental teams, but I suspect that will come to the fore very quickly. Coming back to the presentation, Chair, I'm again going to take the view of my colleagues that I'll try and just stick to the high note, and if there are any questions coming up the presentation, I'd be happy to address them as well. What we also did, Chair, was to make available a pre-read. So there's, in fact, an additional document, which I'm not sure members have had the opportunity of looking at beforehand. But it's an additional 10 or 12 page document that actually gives you more insight into some of the issues that we can discuss. So a key issue, Chair, and one that is located directly within SAHPRA's mandate, is the issue of access to cannabis for medicinal purposes, putting together a framework in which we could look at local opportunities for cultivation of cannabis for medicinal and research purposes, and evolving a local framework as well for processing and manufacturing of relevant health products from cannabis. And that's really where our mandate is. So I thought, and as I mentioned, it's really also about giving the committee more information, Chair, in relation to how SAHPRA works and what provisions in the Medicines Act in fact require certain functions to be carried out. So the presentation will simply look at the legal framework for scheduling. It will look at the legal status of cannabis, both locally as well as internationally, and then look at the evolving framework, again, globally and internationally, in terms of cannabis for medicinal purposes. The issue of cultivation of medicinal cannabis, I've touched on industrial hemp cultivation because I think it is relevant to get some clarity on how best South Africa needs to be prioritizing that as well. So some of our thinking and recommendations we'll bring to the fore as well. And then some of the key things that need to be done to close the loop in this space in relation to the intergovernmental and external stakeholder engagement that I mentioned earlier on as well. But coming back to what the vice chair of SAPRA said earlier on, in terms of SAPRA's mandate, its regulatory mandate, it's clearly driven by two key objectives.
Sorry, I'm just like, where are we here?
We are on slide two.
We have this.
We're on slide number three now. It took a long drive to slide number three. Prof, just get to your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. It's page two of the presentation, which looks at SAPRA's mandate in the context of two key objectives. And one is its role as a gatekeeper in protecting patients from the harmful effects of medicine. And clearly there's an important additional role of seeing the regulator as an enabler in terms of ensuring that patients have access to safe, quality, and efficacious medicine wherever there are unmet needs. And it's really in that context that I think we'd like to pose this discussion. So the Medicines Act, which is really slide three now that I'm on, in terms of the legal framework for scheduling and regulatory control, it's really the Medicines Act that gives SAPRA the mandate for controlling the sale, supply, and use of medicines and substances. Section 22A of the Medicines Act, in fact, allows the regulatory agency to have a process in which all medicines are subject to a scheduling process on the basis of those active ingredients that they use. There's a key component within the Medicines Act is the schedule, and Section 22A in fact also allows the Minister of Health, on the recommendation of the regulatory authority, to in fact approve the schedule. So it does allow for a very dynamic process for when a regulator makes a decision around the availability of a medicine to ensure that there's an aligned, timely process to schedule the substances contained in those medicines as well. The schedules as well, Chair, can be amended as needed, and that happens from time to time as new information becomes available regarding a medicine. So you might find that a medicine might initially be made available as a prescription-only product or as a controlled medicine, but through post-marketing surveillance and as more information becomes available, decisions can be taken to look at whether or not the medicine should be rescheduled and made available in a different category. If we go to slide 40, which is really looking at some of the key principles around the scheduling process, scheduling, in fact, allows for different levels of regulatory control of therapeutic substances. And this is really whether they're in the natural form, whether they are as active pharmaceutical ingredients, or whether they're already available in finished formulations. So that what SAPRA does in terms of Section 22 of the Medicines Act is in fact to schedule a substance. And in that respect, medicines containing those substances would in fact have that schedule. In doing this work, Chair, a primary consideration is safety in relation to the therapeutic use or the therapeutic indications for these medicines. And as many members might know, substances may be listed in one of eight schedules in terms of the Medicines Act, with Schedule 0 all the way through to Schedule 7, with Schedule 0 being medicines that are easily available over-the-counter with what is currently considered to be a reasonable safety margin. Substances may also be listed in more than one Schedule G, and that's again based on the indications, the dosage form that is being used, the route of administration, the strength, the dose, the duration, or even a combination of all of these things. But more importantly, the framework for scheduling in South Africa is one that aligns and complies with our responsibilities and obligations under international drug control conventions and treaties that we are signatory to as South Africa Chief. On page 5, specifically with regard to substances which may be abused or misused, the Medicines Act takes the view, in line with global conventions, that medicines that have a high risk of dependence or abuse, that have therapeutic purposes, there is an obligation on governments to ensure that medical needs are met while also having appropriate controls to prevent diversion or dependence or abuse. So the issue of ensuring medical needs are met is actually quite a key and important process in terms of SAHPRA's mandate and its obligations in terms of the Medicines Act. Clearly, it's also about timely implementation of policies that emanate out of our obligations in terms of these international conventions and treaties. I'm not sure if many members are aware, but it is the scheduling of a substance in the Medicines Act that in fact drives its control under other pieces of legislation. So the Drugs and Drugs Trafficking Act, the Prevention and Treatment of Drug Dependency Act, the Criminal Procedure Act, all take their lead from the schedules in the Medicines and Related Substances Control Act, which is why, Chair, an important function and mandate of SAHPRA is to ensure that its scheduling is always in line with the key recommendations coming out of international bodies like the International Narcotics Control Board. If we move on to page 4, which is slide 6, it's just the framework for scheduling, and I mentioned that previously, that we have Schedule 0 all the way to Schedule 8, with Schedule 0 being medicines available under general sale, and Schedule 8, Schedule 7 and Schedule 8 being those controlled substances that are usually not available. They have very limited therapeutic roles and are only available under special permits. If one looks at the status of cannabis internationally, and one looks at, firstly, the fact that South Africa is a signatory to an important convention, and that is the United Nations Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs. It's also called the 61 Convention. Under this convention, cannabis is classified as a Schedule 1 and a Schedule 4 substance, which actually makes it subject to special restrictions. But again, the way in which the convention is reflected, it does in fact allow countries to have frameworks that would allow for these products to be controlled in a particular way for their potential health roles and effects as well. So having said that, there is a provision in this convention that actually says that access for medical and research purposes can in fact be considered for substances that are controlled in Schedule 1 and Schedule 4 of the convention. It's for that reason, Chair, that the International Narcotic Control Board and this global body, whilst recommending that consideration can be given for medical and research purposes, also requires that there's regulatory frameworks in place to enable medical access as well as research access, that there are regulatory procedures for licensing and registration for suitable products, that control systems are in place where cultivation is being considered by a particular member state, as well as defining what are those varieties those cannabis cultivars that in fact can be considered for cultivation in the context of medicinal use. And I think there's a lot of data and research available to guide some of those recommendations as well. Having said that, I think there's a lot of concern that these international conventions don't go far enough, and that many European countries, Australians, Canadians, and even the United States, have in fact begun advocating for an easing of some of the restrictions in some of these treaties. South Africa is part of this global framework, and clearly is keeping a watching brief on these developments. Slide 8 is looking at South Africa and the legal status of cannabis in South Africa. And again, Chair, it's not out of step with the 61 Convention, because in South Africa, cannabis is still listed in Schedule 7 as a prohibited substance or as a banned substance. However, for therapeutic purposes, it's listed in Schedule 6 when products contain THC or tetrahydrocannabinol. It's listed in Schedule 4 for therapeutic use when it contains cannabidiol or CBD, where CBD is in fact a non-psychoactive component for which there's a growing body of evidence to suggest that a large part of the therapeutic components of this plant come from. There's also CBD as a health supplement in very small concentrations or very small quantities. And SAHPRA is, in fact, through a recent scheduling amendment, considered a Schedule 0 or over-the-counter for supplement products containing very small concentrations or very small quantities of CBD, which is, as I mentioned, the non-psychoactive part. There is Section 22A9 that I spoke to earlier on, Chair, which says that a Schedule 7 or Schedule 8 substance cannot be acquired, used, possessed, or manufactured unless there's, in fact, a permit issued by the Director General in relation to this. And that is where the concern around 22A9 in relation to cannabis was deemed unconstitutional by the Concord. And as I mentioned, one way to address this very quickly is simply to reschedule cannabis in a way that will allow for it to be used for private or recreational use in the context of adults, for cultivation, for private use, or for cultivation for medicinal use, etc. I'm not sure, Chair, that we're going to have the time to, in fact, have some of that discussion, but we'd be more than happy to come back to the committee to have that discussion with yourself. I would suggest that once we have a little more clarity on the draft legislation that's being put together, that we have the opportunity of coming back to you for your guidance as well. Slide number 9, Chair, really just gives you the current inscription in the schedule for cannabis. And whilst we believe that's the inscription that could be changed, I thought we'd present it to you in the slide, which also clearly says that low THC and low CBD containing preparations, which are essentially what constitutes hemp, is excluded from Schedule 7. So they're not Schedule 7. And that's where governments view currently, Chair, that short of designating cannabis as an agricultural crop, we could already begin evolving a framework for the industrialization of hemp in South Africa. I think it's important to note in this scheduling inscription that there are also synthetic compounds that claim to have cannabinoid effects that are in fact very potent, some of them being thousands of times more potent than the raw material, than the plant. Is also listed in Schedule 7, and until there's better information about their potential uses, these are controlled as prohibited substances. And they listed at the bottom of page 5 or, and slide 9 as all of those JWA 01A, etc. You wouldn't believe, but these come out on a weekly basis. These things change. On a weekly basis, they begin to appear in the global space. And it's really the International Narcotics Control Board that has to be proactive in identifying these and communicating these to member states to allow them to incorporate them into their legislation. So in terms of access of cannabis to medicinal use care and with the background that I've provided, I think it's important to now reflect that the framework SAHPRA has in place is one that in fact enables patients who are in possession of a valid prescription from the health practitioners to be able to access cannabis for medicinal purposes. And there are several ways in which that can be done. Firstly, through registered products that are made available in the market. And these are registered products by SAHPRA that SAHPRA has reviewed for safety, quality, and efficacy. Secondly, where there are cannabis pharmaceutical products that are available globally and not yet registered in South Africa, there is a mechanism within the Medicines Act in terms of Section 21 that will allow a doctor to access medicine for a particular patient. So, and Section 21 is in fact currently the primary way in which patients are accessing medicinal cannabis products through SAHPRA. SAHPRA has received close, in fact, over 100 applications already, the vast majority of which have already been approved for Section 21 applications. And these are usually medicines that are not yet registered in the country or where companies have not submitted applications for registration, but are available in countries like the US, Canada, and several European countries. I've given you some examples of those products later on in the slides as well. And then thirdly, of course, is a framework in which quality assured herbal cannabis products obtained from licensed producers which have standardized levels of cannabinoids and tested and are free of harmful contaminants through a framework for cultivation is the third way that patients could access these products. Slide 11 just talks to the Section 21 mechanism. What we've done there is given you some details of a guideline that SAHPRA has published in terms of Section 21 access, and also the web portal that SAHPRA has in place at the moment that allows patients to apply online for Section 21 access. And generally that process has a turnaround time of 24 hours. Slide 16. Is that where we are? Hang on a minute. Slide 12, Chair, I do apologize. Yeah. Do people have slide 12?
Yes.
Yeah, we do.
Yes.
But I think
the copies that were made for us slide number 12 and page 7, Chair, just provides a little more information on the approach SAHPRA is taking with medical cannabis Section 21 applications. In that a clinician is in fact required to provide a motivation for the use of a product for a particular patient, providing some objective evidence, the route of administration, the dosage, duration of treatment, also needs to be specified by the clinician. There needs to be a framework for monitoring of the patient as well as reporting treatment outcomes back to SAHPRA as well. And if it is Section 21, if it is a patient accessing an as yet unregistered medicine, then that would usually require some informed consent process to be put in place. In terms of which indication SAHPRA is currently providing Section 21 approval for medical cannabis, I've listed some of the indications here, but it's really dependent on several things: the evolving global research databases that are becoming available, the newer sort of information. It's a dynamic space that where new information becomes available very, very quickly. And it's really based on a justifiable motivation by the clinician about what indication. But generally, it's for spastic conditions, it's for severe pain, it's for seizures in patients, including pediatric patients, where patients are refractory to medicines that are currently available in the market. Are some of the sort of indications. The indication for nausea, vomiting, muscle wasting in HIV and AIDS is not really an indication anymore. And SAHPRA has not approved, has not received requests for approval of cannabinoids for that purpose. Largely because there are other better medicines in the marketplace. And for one, the availability of antiretroviral drugs has clearly addressed the issue of patient wasting. Chair, on page 14, just gives you some examples of the registered products, both in South Africa and globally. Clonabinol and Nabilone have been available and registered in South Africa. Nabilone has, in fact, some years ago already been withdrawn by the manufacturer because...
Skip that slide.
Can I skip that?
Yeah.
All right. So the framework, in addition to looking at key indications, as we said earlier on, was one that was also driven by licensing of growers to enable controlled cultivation for medical and scientific purposes, and would in fact enable standardized, quality-assured products that could be used by South Africa. But more importantly, one that could be made available on a global level, but one that could be used as a starting material for production of pharmaceutical products as well. Slide 16, Chair, is really some of the issues that I raised earlier on around cultivation, where SAHPRA, together with the Department of Health, has in fact developed what we believe to be an enabling framework to regulate proposed growers of medicinal cannabis. There's an important role for the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development now in the context of supporting this process through ensuring that there is an overarching framework for good agricultural practices, not just for medicinal cannabis, but certainly in the hemp space as well. And then, of course, the engagement with academic institutions, including the Medical Research Council, around supporting ongoing clinical and pharmaceutical research priorities. SAHPRA has recently provided, published a guideline, and that's on page slide number 17. I've given you the link to that guideline, Chair, and it really, again, provides guidance on the minimum standards required for cultivation, for processing, as well as for manufacture of these products. The cultivation of cannabis and manufacturing of these products, Chair, are subject to strict monitoring by SAHPRA inspectors. And the inspector, in fact, conducts routine and regular compliance and assessment in inspection. Slide 18, which is we're almost done with the presentation now, looks at some of the issues around applications for cultivation licenses or licenses that SAHPRA, in terms of Section 22C, is able to consider. And those are licenses to cultivate and produce, both cannabis and cannabis resin, extract, test cannabis, cannabis resin and specific components as well, and then manufacture of cannabis-containing or cannabinoid-containing medicine, import, export, and distribution is also under SAHPRA's mandate in terms of this licensing framework. I think of note, and something that the committee might want to know, is that SAHPRA has to date received around 80 applications for cultivation licenses. It's important to note, Chair, that the vast majority of these applications that were received were deemed non-compliant and did not meet the minimum standards that had been set out in the SAHPRA guidelines that had been published, and has in fact resulted in SAHPRA putting together a framework to both assist applicants in terms of being able to comply. And that's taken longer than we had thought. To date, SAHPRA has approved 5 cultivation licenses. There's ongoing consideration of the remaining applications, and it includes support, assistance, site inspections on an ongoing basis to allow them to reach the level of compliance that we believe is needed. My colleague who heads the law enforcement and inspectorate unit at SAHPRA, I'm sure would be happy to provide more information in that regard. Chair, as regards hemp calculations, we've demonstrated that hemp is in fact excluded from the provisions of section of Schedule 7, and in fact does allow for cultivation of hemp to be considered. Slide 19 gives you some historical experience as well. We, in 1999 already, the former NCC, together with the Department of Agriculture, enabled a series of hemp cultivation trials to be implemented in the country. And at that time, it required a different level of control because it was about understanding what seed best suited South Africa, excuse me, as one that could be used for hemp cultivation. And in fact, the result of those trials, Chi, was the development of genetically modified seed that could be used specifically for hemp cultivation in South Africa. And SAHPRA does believe, Chair, that hemp cultivation should be controlled under the Department of Agriculture whilst ensuring adherence to good agricultural practices, which is their mandate. The last slide, Chair, which is slide 20 on page 11, is really just talking to some of the things that I started talking about at the beginning of this presentation. And I think we've made, I've spoken to all of those already, but we're more than happy to take some questions. And I do apologize for taking longer than that.
So if all what you have said was on the document, it would have been easy to follow.
Yeah.
Now, you have said half of your presentation is not here.
Yeah.
It's in you, and
yeah.
We cannot have access to it.
Yeah.
That's why when you present, you leave us behind with every other piece of information that can be placed on when we have left. Now, we can't go and call you again to give us what you have just said on the whole opening remarks. But just before we start, what is hemp? Even when, what's hemp? Yes.
I do apologize and take your comments and agree that we should have probably given you a better presentation. But I did preface it by saying that there was a document that I had hoped was made available, and I understood that that has been made available. We'll make sure that yourself and the honourable members of the committee get the full document,
okay.
Which in fact has one of the comments that I also made. So, hemp, and the concern at the moment is that if one looks at a cannabis plant and a hemp plant, they look identical. The The difference is that hemp does not contain the concentration of psychoactive compounds. So the THC is valent. And in that way, hemp actually has an additional use, which is in the manufacture of fiber. And it's fiber, it's cosmetic products, it's a whole range of things. Many countries are in fact developing, manufacturing bricks out of cannabis fiber as well. So clearly, the view is that there is an industrialization strategy that needs to be considered. And I think that's really what government is doing.
I saw one of the guys already wanted to put his hand up. Now this is a space and time for members
to interact with their presentation. I'll start on Honorable Wilson, you're number one. Wahubi, you're number two. Jacobs, number three. Tumza Janji, you're number four. Muna, you're number five. This guy, Jacobs, number six. She was seven, and then number eight, number five, eight, nine is Honorable Shengwa. We also wanted to come in, Honorable Gela, 10. Right. I'm going to go more than a palm, so I'm going to say,
thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, I have an appointment. I have not been well, but I need to rush off to now. But having been, apart from Dr. Temba Kwa, I'm the only other person who's been on this portfolio for any length of time. And I just want to say that in the last couple of years, up to where we are now, as far as SAPRA is concerned, it's actually quite incredible what you've been able to achieve. Because you were very headstrong. The odds were strapped against you. There was changing of legislation. There were financial issues. And I think, another professor said us today, it's not about quality always, it's about the ideas. Not about the quantity, it's something about, you know, it's often about the ideas. And I think the progress that you have made is actually very, very commendable. The only question I have, and you can just shake all this, I'm very anti-testing on animals, whether it be cosmetic, and I know on occasion it has to be medicinal. Do we practice that in this country? Thank you.
Maybe they will answer this question. When are you leaving now? Yeah. Have you got any choice of animals that must be avoided or any animals? Can you just try and help her with this part? You answer after she's gone, but maybe it's just fair to give her that background now while she's around. Can I comment on that?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, there is a move to move away from testing on animals, but sometimes it is unavoidable because you have to use something that's closest to a human, but it is done very sensitively so that animals, just because they can't speak, cannot take an advantage of. But there is a move to use more mathematical models rather than animals to do some of the testing that we used to use animals for.
Then you can follow right now.
Thanks, Chairperson. I have one simple question, really. I did read up a lot on SAPRA as an organization and where you guys have been, as my colleague has stated. And I see that you guys have had a really tough time in the recent years. But you have launched a backlog program that you are seeking to sort of clear. So the question really I have, you've stated that there's about 5,000 or 6,000 applications that you're still working through. 11,000. Sorry, I can't now remember, but it is obviously a big number. And you've got an ambitious target of trying to clear those backlogs within the next 24 months. So I did see that part in your presentation where you spoke about the strategy, but I would really like to know precisely, because or as to how you intend on using technology and also how to expedite those reviews for the backlogs, because it seems to me that that is a big challenge for you, and it seems to me that as an organization like yours, it's quite important that you work through backlogs like that, so that you know, we don't have 11 or 16,000 of backlogs sitting unattended.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for your coming here and presenting to us. I just want to mention a few things. My colleague has mentioned the backlog. Now, all things being equal, I'm quite concerned that you're saying you already have an online system for some of the products, yet when you speak about the clinical trials, you're saying you're hoping to still put it into place. And that does concern me about a little bit, because clinical trials are important. So maybe you need to look at maybe speeding that up a bit. And then on your slide, 70. Your backlog budget. You're showing under 2018-2019, you're showing an income in your first line, SAPRA revenue from fees. If we're talking about there being a backlog, we should surely expect CFO that there would also be an income from revenue fees in each of those years. And those would probably help you very much with those red numbers that you have at the bottom, and you should be able to do an extrapolation at least of that, and that might give us a fairer picture of where you are financially as an organization. As far as your cannabis situation, now we've been talking about this for a long time, and surely the Concord judgment just changed things very quickly. I do have a concern as a medical practitioner about you saying we need to reschedule it. And the manner that I hear you to be is that it will be a Schedule 1 or maybe a Schedule 2. Not at all. Because that would really, from a medical perspective, would be a very serious concern. And so if we are going to be discussing it, we should surely get the academics on board, and we should surely get the universities and you know, many more people on board in terms of discussing the rescheduling of
cannabis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think some of the questions that I wanted to ask have been asked. But I wanted to ask the chief first. Can you explain for me? And the second question I have was on the on the unit, the radiation control unit. I think what I wanted to explain, to ask the radiation control unit versus the I think you mentioned another department that had to do with the radiation control unit. I didn't get that. Yes, Senator. Can I get the what is the linkage? Yeah, I think those are the two that you are sending.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of this of the Portfolio Committee. On slide 24, the last slide, where you speak of the SARA new model for evaluation, including the reliance on a regulatory decision of selected global renowned regulatory authorities.
is this because, I'm looking at the countries here, looking at G7, but is it about historical colonial relations, or is it about the reliance that we have over time of the consumption of the drug from the United States and Europe? That's the first section, because I know that South Africa is part of the BRICS, and I know that even if we are to speak of HIV and AIDS drug, pharmaceutical drug concentrates, India will be one of the countries that can be, perhaps even some of the Western countries import some of the concentrate. So I'm saying, noting that there's a shift in terms of South Africa's global relation to the BRICS countries, why the BRICS countries are not considered? Are they considered to be inferior products? I'm saying in terms of their regulatory institution. I think our institution need to begin to align with those countries and test and prove and say, listen, we believe it should be scientific. It should not be assumption what's made in Europe, Canada and everywhere is the best for our consumption and so on. I speak about regulatory bodies. And I think we need to be able to look. When you say you are a mouth, I'm saying, I can believe China is, I believe India is, I believe Russia is. But I'm saying, our institution need to be able to prove beyond reasonable doubt, rather than us making assumptions which might be based on previous colonialization. Politically speaking, because it's not just administrative discussion that we may have from this side of parliament. Let me come to our learned professor here on the cannabis. One, I think you're quite right, Chairperson. In fact, 60% of his input was not in the document. And he make an assumption that we've received a particular document, 12-page document elsewhere at a particular point in time. And then the other is within the document. So if we have not, I think, and other, again, 70% of his input, again, I'm trying to, on drilling in, he's put a lot of legislative issues. I think, Chairperson, this discussion, we need to be able to get our learned friend, legal minds, to deal with the issue of constitutional court outcome and so on, and other legislation and issues, so that we can come and have a better discussion with him on issues that relate to the institution. So therefore, I'll propose that we don't consider, we note what we received today, but we engage deeply around the issue of the legislation with the legal mind and so on, because we may take decision or consider a presentation assuming that Professor, you know, would have really been an expert also on the legal hand, which might not be which might be subjective of reality. I'm not saying it's the case, Prof. Maybe you have both degrees in medicinal and also in legal. I don't know your expertise, again, expert. Okay. I'm just saying, you know, that it's very important that to ourselves as a member to be attuned about the legal, including the interpretation of law. You know, these issues of the interpretation becomes a key issue. Then the other key issue will be, why will therefore SARA accept application when we have not yet promulgated an act? I mean, you know, we have not approved the schedule that you're talking about. Are we not put in a position, Chairperson, I'm not undermining the global trend of other countries going to cannabis and so on. Are we not put in a position that is irreversible as a parliamentarian, so that we'll be forced to be able to go right to approve certain consideration around the schedule, in order to approve because if you approve, well, you know that you are, the people that makes law is parliament, right? But if an institution accepts and consider application, knowing that there's regulatory, policy amendment that requires parliament process, I think it could be a challenge. It's my assumption. Maybe there's no such challenges. But I don't want somebody comes later and say, look, hey, we have considered application already.
Mark, there's a choir at the back.
Can members raise their hands or wait for their opportunity?
It's my observation with all due respect. I think your presentation was a little bit confusing. You know, so a person can take decision without having considered number of factors. Maybe it's because of time, I don't know. And lack of supporting a lot of resource material to support your proposal and so on. I'm saying, and I'm sure we may need to engage on the issues of the radioactive material. We may be in control. We may be able to engage with NEXA, which I think falls within the Department of Energy, you're right, on the other level to see what is it, you know, how does the process flow in terms of licensing, because I know NEXA also issues licenses on radioactive materials and so on. And I'm sure there's also nuclear medicine, which also NEXA, I think, I don't know whether it might be following here in terms of what is medicine category, but I'm saying we should find what is the difference around those two institutions. Thank you, Chairperson. But I recommend that really we don't consider, we just note, we go on drawing board and engage, get interpretation on legal issues, so that when you engage, we are very clear in terms of statutes that have been quoted here several times. Thanks.
Honourable members, your transport will be here in 45 minutes. I'm not going to ask them to delay. They come in 45 minutes for those who want to be transported to your residences. 45 minutes, your transport arrives and leaves.
This is Martin.
So, curse your opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to say thank you for your presentation to both the Professor and to the CEO. Just in terms of, I think my colleague has put my concern very, very clear, because for me personally, and I know for some of our members, they have had previous exposure to the content, especially as it comes to the scientific background around cannabis as well as the legislative framework that determines that. But I think I would also stand with what he said, which is it is very important. It was not very clear to me whether the aim was to push for us to reconsider or to have a consideration for the rescheduling or not, like Dr. Kenny said. And therefore I agree with my colleague. I just need a clarification, and I think it was maybe just a comment that was made, but is there a specific reason why the mandate of the department was specifically linked to include reproductive health care as a mandate, from the Constitution? Was that for a particular reason, or was it just, mentioned within the overall framework of providence of service? Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered in the question of the off, but I'm still curious about who are the five manufacturers that got licensing upon the budget approved. Thank you.
Thank you. I forgot about that.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask on the basis of slide 24, where reference is made to the academic applicants within SAPRA, and just to hear from you about the status of the academic applicants with reference to gender equality, right? Gender equality application success, inclusive of racial segregation. So we just would like to have just a summary of who is who has been accepted so far, please specify the percentage per gender. How many males, how many females, and then who's black, how many black, white, whatever. Please. And then when I arrived here, a mention was made of an acting CEO. And that has got a problem in connection with slide 31, acting. Just the term acting, to say when is acting going to stop acting in that position. When are we having a CEO? Because slide 31, we talk about capacitation. Slide 31, mention is made of capacitation, the success of capacitation. Can you help me here? What's slide 31? Yes, bullet three, capacitation of the organizational executive and senior management. I believe the CEO is part and parcel of the organizational executive. So there's nothing that says to that person who is acting that gives him or her, you know, that freedom and the capacity to explode in his or her contribution towards the success of SAPRA. So my question is, you have started this process since 2019, it's just coming to an end. Yet the key executive position still remains acting. So I'm still saying, when is acting going to be slashed off so that we have a CEO? And last one, there are a number of countries here that are considered where you have some working relationship with. You haven't ever in your presentation made mention of Cuba. And Cuba is performing better as compared to other countries, especially on infant mortality and life expectancy rate. And our students are being educated there in Cuba, but you don't make mention of anything that you can in actual fact learn from them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just covered because I was just asking about licensing, but now what I'm going to ask partly is why other medicine are not paid by the medical aid, other.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I'm also covered. My question was raised.
Sapra, may I request that in future you save yourself a lot of ink and our ink. If you write black on a white paper, it comes up clearly. We could do away with this lot of colors, this blue. It took a lot of your ink unnecessarily. Number two, any slide here, you struggle to say what slide is this I'm looking for. Is it slide number 2 or 20? You struggle. You have a small thing there that you have to wear a double lens to look for. That's really not very interesting. But I'm going to request among the people here, putting on a spotlight, Professor Hausek must say something. You can't come all the way and not say words. Professor Hausek is one head of department who has been a head of department in Free State for a long, long time. When he thought he was retiring, this government sent him to Western Cape to do a very good job there. And he is one of those in the National Health Council, in the NHC, that when he speaks, we all listen because of his experience in leading health in the country from the time pre-democracy. And he went right on and you retired almost about 2 years ago. So we really thank you, Professor Austin, for your contribution in the country, for what we have done. I would wish that you say something, especially in regards to, because I think I take what the coordinators might say, I take what the coordinators are saying, that by the way, this presentation about cannabis was brought in here just to get us going, so that we are not completely lost.
Oh.
We are far from ever being able to make a meaningful response from our side. Because where we're sitting, well, Professor Hauser can be able to come in this issue of what are we talking about here? Are we talking about medicinal cannabis vis-a-vis commercial cannabis? That is why there's an important slide here which is really beyond our contribution. This slide number 16, I had to look for what is slide number 16 on this one. Let's talk about cultivation of medicinal cannabis. It talks about SAPRA working with the Department of Health, and it also talks about working with the Department of Agriculture and MRC. I would have thought maybe you're also going to say the cultivation of cannabis for commercial use. But there is a wave of commercial use. For all I care, I don't know what happened to those people who applied to you and you turned them down. Do you think they listened to you? We don't know. So there is a wave out there that I must get my hectares of land and start
producing
cannabis because I'm going to sell it. And the court is saying, please have enough just for your own personal use. Now somebody can say, this commercial use is also for my personal use. So there's a whole range of things that are sitting there. Department of Health, Department of Agriculture, other bodies, Department of Justice come in there and guide us where we're going. So for us colleagues, I really didn't expect you to have a complete resolution here, just to get a feel that there is a debate out there which we can't be left out of it and we need to understand. Well, I would like to hear, there's a problem in the country with regards to codeine, and which is found in the cough mixture. There has been a thought that maybe codeine must be scheduled higher, so that you don't just go into any chemist and any grandmother buying codeine, and therefore any school child getting codeine and they use it the way they use it. Who is going to assist us in that process? How far are you as staff in terms of rescheduling? Because I heard that you are saying we are not going to reschedule cannabis from where it is to come down. Can you reschedule codeine from where it is to go up? I just thought it would be important. Was it just a difficult debate in terms of these issues? I also am one of those who wish you all the luck. You are not really, you have a very ambitious plan to do with the backlogs. I listened to one of you, I don't know, I can't remember, in the SAFM, where you were specifically asked as SAPRA, how are you dealing with the backlog? And there, you did not come out very clear. Whoever was representing yourself did not come out very clearly. And here, I don't have a comfort to say, you are saying you are getting over 4,000 applicants applications per year. You are dealing with 2.5 per year. So it means every year there's a backlog before you can touch anything. Mm-hmm. Now, how on earth are you really going to deal with this issue? I'm happy and to hear that we are prioritizing those medicines in the country that we need so much, medicines for cancer, for HIV, for TB. Mm. But there's a whole host of other medicines that are needed to be up there on the front row. So are you really honest telling us that you are going to deal with the backlog within 24 months, or you really are thinking, let's pull the wool over their faces and let them go comfortably and hope that things will be sorted out? Yeah, so let me leave the but it would be nice, Professor, to hear your greetings us and tell us why you choose to retire the way you are retiring.
Yeah.
Are you happy where you are? Can we get you to be much more pushy and do a lot of other things? Thanks.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, thank you very much for those kind words. Didn't quite expect that. Yes, I am retired simply because I reached the chronological limit of employment within the public service. In fact, I stayed on beyond my welcome until I was 66 and a half. And so only way I could stay on would be by an act of parliament. So I retired. I have subsequently been on a couple of task teams for the previous Minister of Health. I think Honourable Chair will remember that and made various recommendations. And I am currently assisting in the NHI War Room in terms of specialist input. So I'm not idle, and I'm on the board of SAPRA. I chair the, to come back to SAPRA, I chair the Risk Audit and Governance Committee, and with my colleague who's not here, Lissi Bonifosu, who is the chair of the Finance Committee, I'm sure when we return to this committee to review the Auditor General's report and the annual financial statements, I will probably have more to say. I think I would echo the point made by both the acting CEO and the Vice Chair of the Board, in that we have faced many challenges in setting a 3A public entity up from virtually nothing, and particularly hampered quite significantly by the prolonged industrial action at Civitas and the National Development Fund, which made it actually very difficult to get the systems, because remember, you've got to set up the financial systems, the human resource management systems, the personnel issues, labour forums, etc. And I think that has now come a long way. Maybe to reassure the Honourable Member about the Acting CEO, firstly I would like to compliment our Acting CEO, who's really stepped into the breach and done an amazing job. She's now been appointed by the Board as our Chief Regulatory Officer, so that's an important appointment. And I think she will obviously have to support the CEO. That process has reached its culmination.
It's a she.
She.
It is a she. It's a she.
I said she.
It is a she.
She and the CEO appointment, a recommendation has been made to from the Board. It has to go for consultation with the National Minister. When that is done, then the appointment obviously will be announced, and with hopefully the acceptance of the nominated candidate, we will have a CEO. And I'm sure that at a subsequent meeting, you will be impressed if that person does. I was part of the selection committee chaired by the Chair of the Board, Professor Rees. It's been a long process. It's difficult to recruit people of quality into these kind of jobs, which are challenging and are risky for professionals. In terms of the risk that they face, both personally and professionally. So I must say I'm very positive about the individual that has been identified to assume this role. So, Chair, thank you very much for those kind words. I appreciate them.
All the other members, if you could then respond. You may not be exhaustive, but just take what you can. I will stop you at about 7:15 if you go beyond 7:15.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We are going to divide the questions amongst ourselves and respond to accordingly. And the first question from Honourable Kwakobe was around the ability to finish the backlog within 24 months. And amongst us, Mr. Davis Malagi over there, who's the head of the backlog project, he came in late. We didn't introduce him to take care of the backlog question. Then there was the question of the budget for the backlog, which the CFO will respond to. Then cannabis issues, the concern around rescheduling. I think the chair has already said this is just the beginning. I think we're going to need more engagement around this issue. And the rescheduling is generally, as Prof. Shabir Banu has indicated, based on the safety and the risk of the particular medicine or active. And therefore, whatever the regulator would reschedule up or down would depend on the indication. What is it going to be used for? Who's going to prescribe it? What are the monitoring procedures going to be? And that's what determines where we put the schedule. And the document that recommends rescheduling is put out onto the public domain for people to comment, and we take those comments seriously, and whenever we come up with a change in the scheduling. I think what the presenter wanted to emphasize is that we may not need to go through a whole overhaul of the legislation, which takes a long time, to ensure access to safe and efficacious medicines. We can do it quicker through scheduling, but there is a participation process through that scheduling. Then there was the question of fee for service that was raised by Honorable Jandi, the CEO, acting CEO will respond to that. And then the issue around the role of RADCON and the National Nuclear Regulator, I think that I will give to Professor Hausam to explain. And then there was a question on why we are using the G7 countries for comparison. I will take that. And then we go on to the interpretation of the law. That is very true. We would get interpretation of the law, as many opinions as there are lawyers in the room. So we take that seriously, and we do agree that we need to engage on the issues that we mentioned that relate to law. Then there was the issue of NEXA and NNR that will be Professor Hausen and RADCON. Then the concern on the previous exposure around cannabis and science and all of that, and is there any reason for why we put reproductive health care in the caption? I'm not sure. Acting CEO, can you respond? Peter will respond to that, our compliance officer. And then the acting CEO, the issue of the acting CEO, Professor Hausam has actually responded to that. And then there was a question of why we haven't considered Cuba, that we will lump with the G7 countries. And then there was a question.
Oui, ma'am. We must fund our allocate. Who are you allocating who? Yeah. So allocate a question, let them answer.
Okay.
I'm revising my time. I'm told that you could have, if you behave very well, all of us, we are invited to dinner before we leave.
Oh, thankfully.
I'm revising our time now. Please, let us try and finish around 10 past, so that members can leave after having dinner. 7:05, we close.
All right. David, can you take the question on when are we... We are not too ambitious in putting 24 months to the backlog. What was the question, please?
And the list of approved manufacturers.
The first.
I didn't want you to read all of them. I wanted you to say, I allocate this question to so and so, and then they fire. Please.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm to try and address the issue about the ambition to clear the backlog in 2 years. Of course, it is ambitious. However, we have gone into details in terms of how long it takes to assess a product, and we used those factors to come with the number of months through which we could clear the backlog. And I do understand that the question was mainly based on the use of technology to address the backlog. We have been using paper-based application historically to date, and if I can tell you that the medicine application can actually go up to this high. So first of all, it takes a lot of space. Secondly, it takes forever to have to transport it to wherever the evaluator is. But now we have adopted what we call the ECTD system and e-submissions. This means application can be submitted online, or they could be brought in the form of a CD or a USB, and they could be loaded on our cloud environment. And our evaluators could, in fact, access that application wherever they are. They should be able to produce a report and actually refer to the next person if it's somebody across the border or anyone elsewhere, they could actually exchange those reports somewhat seamlessly, different from how it's been happening in the MCC historically. I'm not so sure whether this answers the question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Vice Chairperson. There was a comment that was made with regard to automation of clinical trial processes that needed to be prioritized. We take note of that, and we will ensure that we automate, because that will speed up, you know, the review of clinical trial protocol, including the amendment, protocol amendment submitted to the regulatory authority.
CFO, would you take the backlog budget?
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair. There was a question that whether can we not extrapolate the budget for the, you know, the all the other years to ensure that we can reduce that the deficit. What we have done as part of the strategy to show commitment from the industry. So we force them to pay upfront for all the revenue within the backlog project. So that is the total revenue that could be generated from the backlog project. And I think what it says to us is there's a disconnect between what we are obviously charging and the cost to provide the service. And I think one of the plans to address the fees, the structure, to address exactly that differences between how much it's costing us to provide the service vis-a-vis how much we're charging for the service. So that's the challenge we have currently on that.
Yeah, please.
Thank you. Can we then go to the question that was raised by Honorable Janji around fee for service? What did we mean, Honorable CEO? For Honorable Janji, Acting CEO, in relation to RADCON?
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. What we'll say with regard to fee for service is that SAPRA charges various fees for services rendered. For different types of applications that SAPRA receives, we charge for evaluation, we charge for inspections, we charge for, you know, evaluation, inspections, investigations, and so forth. So all these fees are being, you know, published in a document called Fees Payable in terms of the provisions of the Medicines and Related Substance Act, which is published on our website and is also available. And with regard to radiation control, they haven't been charging fees, and they have been doing the inspections, evaluations, and so forth without charging any fees. So with SAPRA, we have constituted a working group that will need to work on, you know, establishing the fees that need to be charged with regard to the services rendered by radiation control unit.
Madam CEO, then we had a question on the role of the NNR and NEXA with regard to licensing and the role of SAPRA. What is the linkage? And I'll ask Professor Hausam to respond to that one.
Just very briefly, because in fact the issue is quite complex, but as you heard, it is determined by the Hazardous Substance Act, which is quite an antiquated act, and the Honourable Member is quite correct that there are two main role players. One is the National Nuclear Regulator, and the other one is now the Department of Health, which then moved that function to SAPRA. So there are, within that group, both apparatus that provides or generates ionizing radiation, and there are sources of ionizing radiation. That which is required for medical purposes clearly should fall under SAPRA as a medical device. However, there's a significant component, one of the groups, which actually is industrial. And that, in fact, is inappropriate to fall under SAPRA, but it currently does. So that there is, in fact, a process to ensure that that function is reallocated to the appropriate government structure. And it requires the action of two government departments. And there is a process that has already been engaged in. But in fact, at the most recent board meeting, a decision was taken that we need to escalate this matter to respective ministers.
Thank you. The next question that came up was with respect to the gender balance and the racial balance in relation to slide 24. I'll ask the acting CEO to respond to that one.
Do me a favor, ma'am. Allocate all of them one time. Allocate the next question.
I did, Chair.
Who is going to take the next question?
Yeah,
because after she completes, it's coming back to you now. You allocate again. It comes back to you now. You allocate again. Allocate all of them one time to all members. Let them deal with 3, 4, 5, and then finish.
The response to slide 24 about status of academic research and gender equality application success, including racial allocation. What SAPRA does is we review the clinical trial protocol submitted for research. With regard to the status of who is involved in research and, you know, gender equality with regard to applications and so forth, the mandate lies with the Medicines Research Council. What we do is we ensure that we also preach what we call transformation. As applications have been submitted, we will be also be sending questions back to the applicants to say, why are we seeing same, you know, investigators? What has been done to ensure that those that are historically disadvantaged also participate in research? So from this angle, this is how we're trying to ensure that, you know, investigators going forward, they look into the issue of transformation when they compile their protocol.
Thank you.
Then the next one was
the question on the manufacturers that were given a cannabis license. Mr. Wondo will take that one. And then we have a question on collaborative agreements, which I will take. That will be the next question. And the next question will be, why are other medicines not paid by medical aid? I can respond to that one. That is not a SAPRA function.
Mm-hmm.
It falls outside our ambit. And then the abuse of coding, I will ask Professor Banu to respond to that.
Honorable Chair, thank you. It's an easy answer on who was given a license for cultivation of medicinal cannabis. The first one was House of Hemp, KZN in Durban. And then the next one is Cullinan in Pretoria. The third one is Leaf Botanicals in Upington. The fourth one, Southern Rice Naturals in Midrand, Johannesburg. The last one was Fell Bridge, that's in Pearl, Western Cape.
I didn't get the name.
Fell Bridge. Fell Bridge. It's F-E-L.
Please repeat, I'm so sorry.
Fell Bridge.
F-E-L.
Yes. F-E-L.
Bridge.
Yes, Bridge.
Bridge.
That's in Pearl, Western Cape. And then the one before that, Southern Rice Naturals. That's in Midrand, Johannesburg.
Southern
Rice.
Southern
Rice.
And Upington?
Upington is the Leaf, L-E-A-F, Botanicals.
Leaf Botanicals.
And then El Paso is E-L. P-A-S-S-O, that's in Cullinan, Pretoria.
Cullinan, Pretoria.
House of Hemp, that's in KZN, Durban.
Okay. House of Hemp?
Yes.
In Durban.
All right.
I'll get it.
Yeah.
Don't tell whose license are approved.
Are you complete with the questions?
No.
Professor Ozik, somebody was saying, coding.
Rejected.
Corruption and racism.
the regulator has an opportunity to review the current scheduling status in fact of codeine containing products. Not too long ago, under the MCC, there was in fact a revision of the availability and the scheduling, where only low quantities of codeine was allowed to be made available on products that were scheduled to, so that you no longer now have a situation of unscheduled or scheduled one. All codeine containing preparations are scheduled two. They're meant to be controlled by pharmacists. And if the concern is that that's not necessarily working as it should have. And I think there's a global trend at the moment to consider making all of these products prescription only. So that's certainly something we're looking at.
Maybe just one point in that. Chair, the introduction of a unique patient identifier would enable us to monitor much more carefully. The problem is that you can shop from pharmacy to pharmacy and get the cough mixture or whatever you're talking about. If the pharmacist was able to identify an individual, wherever they'd gone in the country, you could control it much better. So one of the challenges of introducing that, which are, as you're well aware of.
Thank you very much, members. We are done.
Yes. The last question, the very last that was raised that we haven't responded to, and the question was, why are we using the North regulators, not country regulators, to do the reliance methodology? And I wanted to say these regulators were chosen on the basis of their maturity. And secondly, by the time the new chemical entities are filed, new medicines are filed with us, they've already been filed in the north, because most of them come from the north, the new, they come from the north, and they've already been filed and evaluated by these regulators, and therefore the reliance would be on something that has already been done by them by the time the applicants file with us. More often than not, they are already way advanced in the regulation, or in fact they have been registered before they come to us. But we will note from this slide that we also have put the World Health Organization pre-qualification framework, which includes all of us developing countries in that exercise, and therefore there is input from developing countries from the WHO pre-qualification framework. And lastly, we have put the Zazwana collaboration process. This is a SADC initiative where SADC country regulators meet and evaluate together. And this is aimed at efficiency as well as capacity building. So we are going there. One of the other challenges that we sometimes find is that in some countries, there is a national regulator, but also the states do their own regulation outside the national federal government, which would make it a little more complicated. To do these reliance methodologies with as many states and all of that. But we take the points that have been raised and we look at that. And in fact, with the medical devices, we have a group that is called the IMDRF, which has quite a good sprinkling of developing countries like Brazil and so on, South American countries, that is an effort to make us equal in terms of it's work in progress. But we take the points very, very, very seriously. And I wanted to apologize for the color of the slides. We take your point. We'll make sure in the numbering that we do that. We apologize also for the document that was not circulated around the cannabis issue, that we will make sure that we make good of that. And thank you.
Honorable Tembe, why you asked about the why are you silent on Cuba?
Cuba is also not at the maturity level of this. Yes, in terms of scientific inquiry, in terms of development of certain scientific things, but we're talking regulatory standards here. And regulatory standards, and we are saying we are going there, but I haven't seen. I haven't seen much collaboration with them, and as a starting regulator, we start with the moon and we move to where we should be, and that's a cautious approach in our humble opinion.
Thank you.
It's not your fault. We're not going to hold you on that. We as a country have not tapped on the technology and the advancement of Cuba in terms of medicinal technology. So we all are meeting on that. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I must thank you first because they have been here since 9 o'clock. They have been back-to-back on meetings, plenary, and we were testing your stamina. And I can tell you today, I felt that I could put you to another meeting now, okay? You could still push, yes. Thank you very much, members from the SAPA. You could feel that there are only two members here who have been in the previous administration. The rest of us are new. And therefore, for us to be closer to this process, it will have to take quite a long time for us to get used to. We are glad that we've introduced. We are happy with their annual performance plan and this and that and your ambition. That one we accept. But the other part that we are putting in place, that we were just noted, is the issue of the process of cannabis. That involves many more other than the portfolio committee. We want you to process those things with the constitutional court decision that the committee has held, the justice, everybody must have. We oversight the government department. So you are part of your work closely. So make sure that these things are being processed. So next time we will meet with you, we are able to tell us progress that is being made. I will ask the secretary to announce where Tina is served, because we have to let us go there for Tina.
Application was disqualified.